I thought we had problems in Gatlin. I couldn't imagine a more powerful version of Ridley hanging around full-time. So now none of you can live with your parents. Everyone decided it would be too hard for parents to turn their backs on their children if they went dark. So ever since then, children live with other family members until they're claimed. Then why does Ryan live with her parents? Ryan is... Ryan. She's a special case. She shrugged. At least, that's what Uncle Macon says every time I ask. It all sounded so surreal. The idea that everyone in her family possessed supernatural powers. They looked like me, like everyone else in Gatlin. Well, maybe not everyone, but they were completely different. Weren't they? Even Ridley, hanging out in front of the Stop and Steal, none of the guys had suspected she was anything other than an incredibly hot girl, who was obviously pretty confused if she was looking for me. How did it work? How did you get to be a caster instead of just some ordinary kid? Were your parents gifted? I hated to bring up her parents. I knew what it was like to talk about your dead parent, but at this point, I had to know. Yes, everyone in my family is. What were their gifts? Were they anything like yours? I don't know. Grandma's never said anything. I told you, it's like they never existed. Which just makes me think, you know? What? Maybe they were dark. And I'm going to go dark too. You're not. How do you know? How can I have the same dreams you have? How do I know when I walk into a room whether or not you've been there? Ethan, it's true. I touched her cheek and said quietly, I don't know how I know. I just do. I know you believe that, but you can't know. I don't even know what's going to happen to me. That's the biggest load of crap I've ever heard. It was like everything else tonight. I hadn't meant to say it, at least not out loud, but I was glad I did. What? All that destiny garbage. Nobody can decide what happens to you. Nobody but you. Not if you're a Duquesne, Ethan. Other casters, they can choose. But not us. Not my family. When we're claimed at 16, we become light or dark. There is no free will. I lifted her chin with my hand. So you're a natural. What's wrong with that? I looked into her eyes, and I knew I was going to kiss her. And I knew there was nothing to worry about as long as we stayed together. And I believed, for that one second, we always would. I stopped thinking about the Jackson basketball playbook and finally let her see how I felt, what was in my mind, what I was about to do, and how long it had taken me to get up the nerve to do it. Oh. Her eyes widened, bigger and greener, if that was even possible. Ethan, I don't know. I leaned down and kissed her mouth. It tasted salty, like her tears. This time, not warmth, but electricity, shot from my mouth to my toes. I could feel tingling in my fingertips. It was like shoving a pen into an electrical outlet, which Link had dared me to do when I was 8 years old. She closed her eyes and pulled me into her, and for a minute, everything was perfect. She kissed me, her lips smiling beneath mine, and I knew she had been waiting for me, maybe just as long as I had been waiting for her. But then, as quickly as she had opened herself up to me, she shut me out, or more accurately, pushed me back. Ethan, we can't do this. Why? I thought we felt the same way about each other. Or maybe we didn't. Maybe she didn't. I was staring at her from the end of her outstretched hands that were still resting on my chest. She could probably feel how fast my heart was beating. It's not that. She started to turn away, and I was sure she was about to run away like she had the day we found the locket at Greenbrier, like the night she left me standing on my porch. I put my hand on her wrist and instantly felt the heat. "Then what is it?" She stared back at me, and I tried to hear her thoughts, but I had nothing. "I know you think I have a choice about what's going to happen to me, but I don't. And what Ridley did tonight, that was nothing. She could have killed you, and maybe she would have if I hadn't stopped her." She took a deep breath, her eyes glistening. "That's what I could turn into. A monster. Whether you believe it or not." I slid my arms back around her neck, ignoring her. But she went on. "I don't want you to see me like that." "I don't care." I kissed her cheek. She climbed off the bed, sliding her arm out of my hand. "You don't get it." She held up her hand. 122. 122 more days, smeared in blue ink, as if that was all we had. "I get it. You're scared. But we'll figure something out. We're supposed to be together." "We're not. You're immortal. You can't understand. I don't want to see you get hurt, and that's what will happen if you get too close to me." "Too late." I'd heard every word she had said, but I only knew one thing. I was all in. October 9th. The Greats. It had made sense when a beautiful girl was saying it. Now that I was back home, alone and in my own bed, I was finally losing it. Even Link wouldn't believe any of this. I tried to think about how the conversation would go. The girl I like, whose real name I don't know, is a witch, excuse me, a caster, from a whole family of casters, and in 5 months she's going to find out essentially if she's good or evil. And she can cause hurricanes indoors and break the glass out of windows. And I can see into the past when I touch the crazy locket Amma and Macon Ravenwood, who isn't actually a shut-in at all, want me to bury. A locket that materialized on the neck of a woman in a painting at Ravenwood, which, by the way, is not a haunted mansion, but a perfectly restored house that changes completely every time I go there, to see a girl who burns me and shocks me and shatters me with a single touch. And I kissed her. And she kissed me back. It was too unbelievable, even for me. I rolled over. Tearing. The wind was tearing at my body. I held onto the tree as it pounded me, the sound of its scream piercing my ears. All around me the winds swirled, fighting each other, their speed and force multiplying by the second. The hail rained down like heaven itself had opened up. I had to get out of here. But there was nowhere to go. "Let me go, Ethan! Save yourself!" I couldn't see her. The wind was too strong, but I could feel her. I was holding her wrist so tightly, I was sure it would break. But I didn't care. I wouldn't let go. The wind changed direction, lifting me off the ground. I held the tree tighter, held her wrist tighter, but I could feel the strength of the wind ripping us apart, pulling me away from the tree, away from her. I felt her wrist sliding through my fingers. I couldn't hold on any longer. I woke up coughing. I could still feel the wind burn on my skin. As if my near-death experience at Ravenwood wasn't enough, now the dreams were back. It was too much for one night, even for me. My bedroom door was wide open, which was weird, considering I had been locking my door at night lately. The last thing I needed was Amma planting some crazy voodoo charm on me in my sleep. I was sure I'd closed it. I stared up at my ceiling. Sleep was not in my future. I sighed and felt around under the bed, I flipped on the old storm lamp next to my bed and pulled the bookmark out from where I'd left off in Snow Crash when I heard something. Footsteps? It was coming from the kitchen, faint, but I still heard it. Maybe my dad was taking a break from writing. Maybe this would give us a chance to talk. Maybe. But when I reached the bottom of the stairs, I knew it wasn't him. The door to his study was shut and light was coming from the crack under the door. It had to be Amma. Just as I ducked under the kitchen doorway, I saw her scampering down the hall toward her room, to the extent that Amma could scamper. I heard the screen door in the back of the house squeak shut. Someone was coming or going. After everything that had happened tonight, it was an important distinction. I walked around to the front of the house. There was an old, beat-up pickup truck, a 50s Studebaker, idling by the curb. Amma was leaning in the window talking to the driver. She handed the driver her bag and climbed into the truck. Where was she going in the middle of the night? I had to follow her. And following the woman who may as well have been my mother when she got into a car at night with a strange man driving a junker was a hard thing to do if you didn't have a car. I had no choice. I had to take the Volvo. It was the car my mom had been driving when she had the accident. That was the first thing I thought every time I saw it. I slid behind the wheel. It smelled of old paper and Windex, just like it always had. Driving without the headlights on was trickier than I'd thought it would be, but I could tell the pickup was heading toward Waiter's Creek. Amma must have been going home. The truck turned off Route 9 toward the back country. When it finally slowed down and pulled off to the side of the road, I cut the engine and guided the Volvo onto the shoulder. Amma opened the door and the interior light went on. I squinted in the darkness. I recognized the driver. It was Carlton Eaton, the postmaster. Why would Amma ask Carlton Eaton for a ride in the middle of the night? I'd never even seen them speak to each other before. Amma said something to Carlton and shut the door. The truck pulled back onto the road without her. I got out of the car and followed her. Amma was a creature of habit. If something had gotten her so worked up that she was creeping out to the swamp in the middle of the night, I could guess it involved more than one of her usual clients. She disappeared into the brush, along a gravel path someone had gone to a great deal of trouble to make. She walked along the path in the dark, the gravel crunching under her feet. I walked in the grass beside the path to avoid that same crunching sound, which would have given me away for sure. I told myself it was because I wanted to see why Amma was sneaking home in the middle of the night, but mostly, I was scared she would catch me following her. It was easy to see how Waiter's Creek got its name. You actually had to wade through Blackwater ponds to get there, at least the way Amma was taking us. If there hadn't been a full moon, I'd have broken my neck trying to follow her through the maze of moss-covered oaks and scrub brush. We were close to the water. I could feel the swamp in the air, hot and sticky like a second skin. The edge of the swamp was lined with flat wooden platforms made from cypress logs tied together with rope, poor man's ferries. They were lined up along the bank like taxis waiting to carry people across the water. I could see Amma in the moonlight, balanced expertly atop one of the platforms, pushing out from the bank with a long stick she used like an oar to skate it across to the other side. I hadn't been to Amma's house in years, but I would have remembered this. We must have come another way back then, but it was impossible to tell in the dark. The one thing I could see was how rotted the logs on the platforms were. Each one looked as unstable as the next, so I just picked one. Maneuvering the platform was a lot harder than Amma made it look. Every few minutes there was a splash when a gator's tail hit the water as it slid into the swamp. I was glad I hadn't considered wading across. I pushed into the floor of the swamp with my own long stick one last time, and the edge of the platform hit the bank. When I stepped onto the sand, I could see Amma's house, small and modest, with a single light in the window. The window frames were painted the same shade of haint blue as the ones at Waite's Landing. The house was made of cypress, like it was part of the swamp itself. There was something else, something in the air, strong and overpowering, like the lemons and rosemary, and just as unlikely for two reasons. Confederate jasmine doesn't flower in the fall, only in the spring, and it doesn't grow in the swamp. Yet there it was. The smell was unmistakable. There was something impossible about it, like everything else about this night. I watched the house. Nothing. Maybe she had just decided to go home. Maybe my dad knew she was leaving and I was wandering around in the middle of the night, risking being eaten by gators for nothing. I was about to head back through the swamp, wishing I'd dropped breadcrumbs on my way out here, when the door opened again. Amma stood in the light of the doorway, putting things I couldn't see into her good, white, patent leather pocketbook. She was wearing her best lavender church dress, white gloves, and a fancy matching hat with flowers all around it. She was on the move again, heading back toward the swamp. Was she going into the swamp wearing that? As much as I didn't enjoy the trek to Amma's house, slogging through the swamp in my jeans was worse. The mud was so thick, it felt like I was pulling my feet out of cement every time I took a step. I didn't know how Amma was able to get through it in her dress at her age. Amma seemed to know exactly where she was going, stopping in a clearing of tall grass and mud weeds. The branches of the cypress trees tangled with weeping willows, creating a canopy overhead. A chill ran up my back, though it was still 70 degrees out here. Even after everything I'd seen tonight, there was something creepy about this place. There was a mist coming off the water, seeping up from the sides, like steam pushing out of the lid of a boiling pot. I edged my way closer. She was pulling something out of her bag, the white patent leather shining in the moonlight. Bones. They looked like chicken bones. She whispered something over the bones and put them into a small pouch, not much different from the pouch she had given me to subdue the power of the locket. Fishing around in the bag again, she pulled out a fancy hand towel, the kind you'd find in a powder room, and used it to wipe the mud from her skirt. There were faint white lights in the distance, like fireflies blinking in the dark, and music. Slow, sultry music and laughter. Somewhere, not that far away, people were drinking and dancing out in the swamp. She looked up. Something had caught her attention, but I didn't hear anything.
"May as well show yourself. I know you're out there."
I froze, panicked. She had seen me. But it wasn't me she was talking to. Out from the sweltering mist stepped Macon Ravenwood, smoking a cigar. He looked relaxed, like he'd just stepped out of a chauffeured car instead of wading through filthy black water. He was impeccably dressed, as usual, in one of his crisp white shirts. And he was spotless. Amma and I were covered in mud and swamp grass up to our knees, and Macon Ravenwood was standing there without so much as a speck of dirt on him.
"About time. You know I don't have all night, Melchizedek. I got to get back. And I don't take kindly to being summoned out here all the way from town. It's just rude. Not to mention inconvenient." She sniffed. "Incommodious, you might say."
I-N-C-O-M-M-O-D-I-O-U-S. 12 down. I spelled it out in my head.
"I've had quite an eventful evening myself, Amory, but this matter requires our immediate attention."
Macon took a few steps forward. Amma recoiled and pointed a bony finger in his direction.
"You stay where you are. I don't like being out here with your kind on this sort of night. Don't like it one bit. You keep to yourself, and I'll keep to mine."
He stepped back casually, blowing smoke rings into the air.
As I was saying, certain developments require our immediate attention.
He exhaled a smoky sigh.
The moon, when she is fullest, is farthest from the sun, to quote our good friends the clergy.
Don't talk your high and mighty with me, Melchizedek. What's so important you need to call me out of bed in the middle of the night?
Among other things, Genevieve's locket.
Amma nearly howled. Holding her scarf over her nose, she clearly couldn't stand to even hear the word locket.
What about that thing? I told you I bound it, and I told him to take it back to Greenbrier and bury it. It can't cause any harm if it's back in the ground.
Wrong on the first count, wrong on the second. He still has it. He showed it to me in the sanctity of my own home. Aside from which, I'm not sure anything can bind such a dark talisman.
At your house? When was he at your house? I told him to stay clear of Ravenwood.
Now she was noticeably agitated. Great. Amma would find some way to make me pay for this later.
Well, perhaps you might consider shortening his leash. Clearly he isn't very obedient. I warned you that this friendship would be dangerous, that it could develop into something more. A future between the two of them is an impossibility.
Amma was mumbling under her breath the way she always did when I didn't listen to her.
He's always minded me till he met your niece, and don't you blame me. We wouldn't be in this fix if you hadn't brought her down here in the first place. I'll take care of this. I'll tell him he can't see her anymore.
Don't be absurd. They're teenagers. The more we try to keep them apart, the more they will try to be together. This won't be an issue once she is claimed, if we make it that far. Until then, control the boy, Amari. It's only a few more months. Things are dangerous enough without him making an even greater mess of the situation.
Don't talk to me about messes, Melchizedek Ravenwood. My family's been cleaning up your family's messes for over 100 years. I've kept your secrets, just like you've kept mine.
I'm not the seer who failed to foresee them finding the locket. How do you explain that? How did your spirit friends manage to miss that?
He gestured around them with a sarcastic flick of his cigar. She spun around, eyes wild.
Don't you insult the greats. Not here. Not in this place. They have their reasons. There must have been a reason they didn't reveal it.
She turned away from Macon.
Now don't you listen to him. I brought you some shrimp and grits and lemon meringue pie.
She clearly wasn't talking to Macon anymore.
Your favorite, she said,
taking the food out of little Tupperware containers and arranging it on a plate. She laid the plate on the ground. There was a small headstone next to the plate and several others scattered nearby.
This is our great house, the great house of my family. You hear? My great-aunt Sissy, my great-great-uncle Abner, my great-great-great-great-grandmama Sulla. Don't you disrespect the greats in their house. You want answers? You show some respect.
I apologize.
She waited.
Truly.
She sniffed.
And watch your ash. There's no ashtray in this house. Nasty habit.
He flicked his cigar into the moss.
Now, let's get on with it. We don't have much time. We need to know the whereabouts of Seraph.
Shh, she hissed. Don't say her name. Not tonight. Shouldn't be out here. Half moons for working white magic and full moons for working black. We're out here on the wrong night.
We have no choice. There was quite an unpleasant episode this evening, I'm afraid. My niece,
who turned on her claiming day, showed up for the gathering tonight. Dell's child? That dark drink of danger? Ridley. Uninvited, obviously. She crossed my threshold with the boy. I need to know if it was a coincidence. No good. No good. This is no good.
Amma rocked back and forth on her heels furiously.
Well, there are no coincidences, you know that. At least we can agree on that.
I couldn't get my mind around any of this. Macon Ravenwood never set foot outside of his house, but there he was, in the middle of the swamp, arguing with Amma, who I had no idea he even knew about me and Lena and the locket.
Amma rummaged around in her pocketbook again. Did you bring the whiskey? Uncle Abden loves his wild turkey.
Macon held out the bottle.
Just put it right there, she said, pointing at the ground, and step back yonder.
I see you're still afraid to touch me after all these years.
I'm not afraid of anything. You just keep to yourself. I don't ask you about your business, and I don't want to know anything about it.
He set the bottle on the ground a few feet from Amma. She picked it up, poured the whiskey into a shot glass, and drank it. I had never seen Amma drink anything stronger than sweet tea in my whole life. Then she poured some of the liquor in the grass, covering the grave.
Uncle Abner, we are in need of your intercession. I call your spirit to this place.
Macon coughed.
You're testing my patience, Melchizedek.
Amma closed her eyes and opened her arms to the sky, her head thrown back as if she was talking to the moon itself. She bent down and shook the small pouch she had taken from her pocketbook. The contents spilled out onto the grave, tiny chicken bones. I hoped they weren't the bones from the basket of fried chicken I'd put away this afternoon, but I had a feeling they might have been.
What do they say? Macon asked.
She ran her fingers over the bones, fanning them out over the grass.
I'm not getting an answer.
His perfect composure began to crack.
We don't have time for this. What good is a seer if you can't see anything? We have less than 5 months before she turns 16. If she turns, she will damn us all, mortals and casters alike. We have a responsibility. A responsibility we both took on willingly, a long time ago. You to your mortals and me to my casters. I don't need you reminding me about my responsibilities. And you keep your voice down, you hear me? I don't need any of my clients coming out here and seeing us together. How would that look? A fine, upstanding member of the community like myself. Don't mess with my business, Melchizedek.
If we don't find out where Seraph, where she is, and what she's planning, we'll have bigger problems on our hands than your failing business ventures, Amaree. She's a dark one. Never know which way the wind will blow with that one. It's like trying to see where a twister will hit. Even so, I need to know if she's going to try to make contact with Lena. Not if. When?
Amma closed her eyes again, touching the charm on the necklace she never took off. It was a disc, engraved with what looked like a heart, with some kind of cross coming out from the top. The image was worn from the thousands of times Amma must have rubbed it, as she was doing now. She was whispering some sort of chant, in a language I didn't understand, but I'd heard somewhere before. Macon paced impatiently. I shifted in the weeds, trying not to make a sound.
I can't get a read tonight. It's murky. I think Uncle Abner's in a mood. I'm sure it was something you said.
This must have been his breaking point, because Macon's face changed, his pale skin glowing in the shadows. When he stepped forward, the sharp angles of his face became frightening in the moonlight.
Enough of these games. A dark caster entered my house tonight. That in itself is impossible. She arrived with your boy, Ethan, which can mean only one thing. He has power, and you have been hiding it from me.
Nonsense. That boy doesn't have power any more than I have a tail.
You're wrong, Amari. Ask the greats. Consult the bones. There is no other explanation. It had to be Ethan. Ravenwood is protected. A dark caster could never circumvent that sort of protection, not without some powerful form of help.
You've lost your mind. He doesn't have any kind of power. I raised that child. Don't you think I'd know it?
You're wrong this time. You're too close to him. It's clouding your vision. And there is too much at stake now for errors. We both have our talents. I'm warning you. There is more to the boy than either of us realized.
I'll ask the greats. If there's something to know, they'll be sure I know it. Don't you forget, Melchizedek, we have to contend with both the dead and the living, and that's no easy task.
She rummaged around in her pocketbook and pulled out a dirty-looking string with a row of tiny beads on it.
Graveyard bone. Take it. The greats want you to have it. Protect spirit from spirit and dead from dead. It's no use for us mortal folk. Give it to your niece, Macon. It won't hurt her, but it might keep a dark caster away.
Macon took the string, holding it gingerly between two fingers, then dropping it into his handkerchief, as if he was pocketing a particularly nasty worm.
I'm obliged.
Amma coughed.
Please tell them I'm obliged. Much.
He looked up at the moon as if he were checking his watch, and then he turned and disappeared, dissolved into the swamp mist as if he had blown away in the breeze. October 10th. Red Sweater. I had barely made it into my bed before the sun rose, and I was tired. Bone tired, as Amma would say. Now I was waiting for Link on the corner. Even though it was a sunny day, I was caught under my own personal shadow, and I was starving. I hadn't been able to face Amma in the kitchen this morning. One look at my face would have given away everything I'd seen last night and everything I felt, and I couldn't risk that. I didn't know what to think. Amma, who I trusted more than anyone, as much as my parents, maybe more, she was holding out on me. She knew Macon, and the two of them wanted to keep Lena and me apart. It all had something to do with the locket and Lena's birthday. And danger. I couldn't piece it together. Not on my own. I had to talk to Lena. It was all I could think about. So when the hearse rolled around the corner instead of the beater, I shouldn't have been surprised. I guess you heard. I slid into the seat, dumping my backpack on the floor in front of me.
Heard what?
She smiled almost shyly, pushing a bag across the seat. Heard you liked donuts? I could hear your stomach growling all the way from Ravenwood. We looked at each other awkwardly. Lena looked down, embarrassed, picking a piece of lint off a soft, red, embroidered sweater that looked like something the sisters would have in the attic somewhere. Knowing Lena, it wasn't from the mall in Somerville. Red? Since when did she wear red? She wasn't under a bad cloud. She had just come out from under one. She hadn't heard me thinking. She didn't know about Amma and Macon. She just wanted to see me. I guess some of what I had said last night had sunk in. Maybe she wanted to give us a chance. I smiled, opening the white paper bag. Hope you're hungry. I had to fight the fat cop for them. She pulled the hearse away from the curb.
So you just felt like picking me up for school?
That was something new.
Nope.
She rolled down the window, the morning breeze blowing her hair into curls. Today it was just the wind.
You got something better in mind?
Her whole face lit up. Now how could there be anything better than spending a day like this at Stonewall Jackson High? She was happy. As she turned the wheel, I noticed her hand. No ink. No number. No birthday. She wasn't worried about anything. Not today. 1:20. I knew it, as if it was written in invisible ink on my own hand. 120 days until it, whatever Macon and Amma were so afraid of, happened. I looked out the window as we turned onto Route 9, wishing she could stay like this for just a little bit longer. I closed my eyes, running through the playbook in my mind, pick and roll, picket fences, down the lane, full court press. By the time we made it to Somerville, I knew where we were headed. There was only one place kids like us went in Somerville, if it wasn't the last three rows of the Cineplex. The hearse rolled through the dust behind the water tower at the edge of the field.
Parkin'. We're parkin' at the water tower? Now?
Link would never believe this. The engine died, our windows were down, everything was quiet, and the breeze blew into her window and out mine.
Isn't this what people do around here?
Yeah, no, not people like us. Not in the middle of a school day.
For once, can't we be them? Do we always have to be us? I like being us.
She unclicked her seatbelt and I unclicked mine, pulling her onto my lap. I could feel her, warm and happy, spreading through me.
So this is what parking is like?
She giggled, reaching over to push my hair out of my eyes.
What's that?
I grabbed her right arm. It was dangling from her wrist, the bracelet Amma had given Macon last night in the swamp. My stomach clenched, and I knew Lena's mood was about to change. I had to tell her.
My uncle gave it to me.
Take it off.
I turned the string around her wrist, looking for the knot.
What?
Her smile faded.
What are you talking about?
Take it off.
Why?
She pulled her arm away from me.
Something happened last night.
What happened?
After I got home, I followed Amma out to Waiter's Creek, where she lives. She snuck out of our house in the middle of the night to meet someone in the swamp.
Who?
Your uncle.
What were they doing out there?
Her face had turned a chalky white, and I could tell the parking part of the day was over.
They were talking about you, about us, and the locket.
Now she was paying attention.
What about the locket?
It's some kind of dark talisman, whatever that means. And your uncle told Amma that I never buried it. They were really freaked out about it.
How would they know it's a talisman?
I was starting to get annoyed. She didn't seem to be focusing on the right thing.
How about how do they even know each other? Did you have any idea your uncle knew Amma?
No, but I don't know everyone he knows.
Lena, they were talking about us, about keeping the locket away from us and keeping us away from each other. I got the feeling they think I'm some kind of threat, like I'm getting in the way of something. Your uncle thinks,
what?
He thinks I have some kind of power.
She laughed out loud, which annoyed me even more.
Why would he think that?
Because I brought Ridley into Ravenwood. He said I'd have to have power to do that.
She frowned.
He's right.
That wasn't the answer I was expecting.
You're kidding, right? If I had powers, don't you think I'd know it?
I don't know.
Maybe she didn't know, but I did. My dad was a writer, and my mom had spent her days reading the journals of dead Civil War generals. I was about as far from being a caster as you could get, unless aggravating Amma counted as a power. There was obviously some kind of loophole that had allowed Ridley to get inside. One of the wires in the caster security system had blown a fuse.
Lena must have been thinking the same thing. Relax. I'm sure there's an explanation. So Macon and Amma know each other. Now we know.
You don't seem very upset about this.
What do you mean?
They've been lying to us, both of them. Meeting secretly, trying to keep us apart, trying to get us to get rid of the locket.
We never asked them if they knew each other. Why was she acting like this? Why wasn't she upset or angry, something?
Why would we? Don't you think it's weird that your uncle is out in the swamp in the middle of the night with Amma, talking to spirits and reading chicken bones?
It's weird, but I'm sure they're just trying to protect us.
From what? The truth? They were talking about something else, too. They were trying to find someone, Sarah something, and about how you can damn us all if you turn.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. Why don't you ask your uncle? See if he'll tell you the truth for once.
I had gone too far. My uncle is risking his life to protect me. He's always been there for me. He took me in when he knew I might turn into a monster in a few months.
What is he really protecting you from? Do you even know?
Myself! She snapped. That was it. She pushed the door open and climbed off my lap, out into the field. The shade of the massive white water tower shielded us from Somerville, but the day didn't seem so sunny anymore. Where there had been a cloudless blue sky just a few minutes ago, there were streaks of gray. The storm was moving in. She didn't want to talk about it, but I didn't care.
That doesn't make any sense. Why is he meeting Amma in the middle of the night to tell her we still have the locket? Why don't they want us to have it? And more important, why don't they want us to be together?
It was just the two of us, shouting in a field. The breeze was churning into a strong wind. Lena's hair started to whip around her face. She shot back,
I don't know. Parents are always trying to keep teenagers apart. It's what they do. If you want to know why, maybe you should ask Amma. She's the one who hates me. I can't even pick you up at your house because you're afraid she'll see us together.
The knot that was building in the pit of my stomach tightened. I was angry at Amma, angrier than I'd ever been at her in my whole life. But I still loved her. She was the one who had left letters from the Tooth Fairy under my pillow, bandaged every scraped knee, thrown me thousands of pitches when I wanted to try out for Little League. And since my mom died and my dad checked out, Amma was the only one who looked out for me, who cared or even noticed if I skipped school or lost a game. I wanted to believe she had an explanation for all of this.
You just don't understand her. She thinks she's,
what,
protecting you? Like my uncle is trying to protect me?
Did you ever consider that maybe they're both trying to protect us from the same thing?
Me? Why do you always go there?
She walked away from me, like she would take off if she could.
Where else is there to go? That's what this is about. They're afraid I'll hurt you, or someone else. You're wrong. This is about the locket. There's something they don't want us to know.
I dug around in my pocket, searching for the familiar shape underneath the handkerchief. After last night, there was no way I was letting it out of my sight. I was sure Amma was going to look for it today, and if she found it, we'd never see it again. I laid it on the hood of the car.
We need to find out what happens next.
Now?
Why not?
You don't even know if it'll work. I started to unwrap it.
There's only one way to find out.
I grabbed her hand. Even as she tried to yank it away, I touched the smooth metal. The morning light turned brighter and brighter until it was all I could see. I felt the familiar rush that had taken me back 150 years, then a jolt. I opened my eyes, but instead of the muddy field and flames in the distance, all I saw was the shadow of the water tower and the hearse. The locket hadn't shown us anything.
Did you feel that?
It started, and then it cut off. She nodded, pushing me away. I think I'm carsick, or whatever kind of sick you'd call it.
Are you blocking it? What are you talking about? I'm not doing anything.
Swear? You aren't using your caster powers or something?
No, I'm too busy trying to deflect your power of stupidity, but I don't think I'm strong enough.
It didn't make sense. Just pulling us in and then kicking us out of the vision like that. What was different?
Lena reached over, folding the handkerchief over the locket. The dirty leather bracelet Amma had given Macon caught my eye.
Take that thing off.
I looped my finger under the string, lifting the bracelet and her arm to eye level.
Ethan, it's for protection. You said Amma makes these kinds of things all the time.
I don't think so.
What are you saying?
I'm saying maybe that thing is the reason the locket doesn't work.
It doesn't work all the time, you know that.
But it was starting to, and something stopped it.
She shook her head, wild curls brushing her shoulder. Do you honestly believe that?
Prove me wrong. Take it off.
She looked at me like I was crazy, but she was thinking about it. I could tell.
If I'm wrong, you can put it back on.
She hesitated for a second, then gave me her arm so I could untie it. I loosened the knot and put the charm in my pocket. I reached for the locket, and she put her hand on mine. I closed my hand around it, and we spun out into nothing. The rain began almost immediately. Hard rain, a downpour, like the sky just opened up. Ivy had always said the rain was God's tears. Today, Genevieve believed it. It was only a few feet, but Genevieve couldn't get there fast enough. She knelt down next to Ethan and cradled his head in her hands. His breathing was ragged. He was alive.
No. No, not that boy, too. You take too much away. Too much. Not this boy, too.
Ivy's voice reached a fever pitch, and she started to pray.
Ivy, get help. I need water and whiskey and something to remove the bullet.
Genevieve pressed the wadded material from her skirt into the hole Ethan's chest had filled just a few moments before.
I love you, and I would have married you, no matter what your family thought, he whispered. Don't say that, Ethan Carter, wait. Don't you say that like you're gonna die. You're gonna be just fine. Just fine, she repeated, trying to convince herself as much as him.
Genevieve closed her eyes and concentrated. Flowers blooming, newborn babies crying, the sun rising. Birth, not death. She pictured the images in her mind, willing it to be so. The images ran in a loop over and over in her mind. Birth, not death. Ethan choked. She opened her eyes and their eyes met. For an instant, time seemed to stop. Then Ethan's eyes closed, and his head rolled to one side. Genevieve closed her eyes again, visualizing the images. It had to be a mistake. He couldn't be dead. She had summoned her power. She had done it a million times before, moving objects in her mother's kitchen to play tricks on Ivy, healing baby birds that had fallen from their nests. Why not now, when it mattered?
Ethan, wake up. Please wake up.
I opened my eyes. We were standing in the middle of the field, in exactly the same place we'd been before. I looked over at Lena. Her eyes were shining, about to spill over.
Oh, God.
I bent down and touched the weeds where we had been standing. A reddish stain marked the plants and the ground around us. It's blood.
His blood?
I think so.
You were right. The bracelet was keeping us from seeing the vision. But why would Uncle Macon tell me it was for protection?
Maybe it is. That's just not the only thing it's for.
You don't have to try to make me feel better.
There's obviously something they don't want us to find out, and it involves the locket, and, I'm willing to bet, Genevieve. We've got to find out as much as we can about them both,
and we have to do it before your birthday.
Why my birthday?
Last night, Amma and your uncle were talking. Whatever they don't want us to know, it has something to do with your birthday. Lena took a deep breath, like she was trying to hold it together.
They know I'm going to go dark. That's what this is about.
What does that have to do with the locket?
I don't know. But it doesn't matter. None of it matters. In 4 months, I'm not going to be me anymore. You saw Ridley. That's what I'm going to turn into, or worse. If my uncle is right and I am a natural, then I'll make Ridley look like a volunteer for the Red Cross.
I pulled her toward me, wrapping my arms around her like I could protect her from something we both knew I couldn't. You can't think like that. There has to be a way to stop it, if that's really the truth.
You don't get it. There's no way to stop it. It just happens.
Her voice was rising. The wind was starting to pick up. Okay, maybe you're right. Maybe it just happens. But we're going to find a way to make it not happen to you. Her eyes were clouding over like the sky.
Can't we just enjoy the time we have left?
I felt the words for the first time. The time we have left. I couldn't lose her. I wouldn't. Just the thought of never being able to touch her again made me crazy. Crazier than losing all my friends. Crazier than being the least popular guy in school. Crazier than having Amma perpetually angry at me. Losing her was the worst thing I could imagine. Like I was falling. But this time I would definitely hit the ground. I thought about Ethan Carter Waite hitting the ground, the red blood in the field. The wind began to howl. It was time to go. Don't talk like that. We're going to find a way. But even as I was saying it, I didn't know if I believed it. October 13th. Marion, the librarian. It had been 3 days, and I still couldn't stop thinking about it. Ethan Carter Waite had been shot, and he was probably dead. I had seen it with my own eyes. Well, technically everyone from back then was dead by now, but from one Ethan Waite to another, I was having trouble getting over the death of this particular Confederate soldier. More like Confederate deserter. My great-great-great-great-uncle. I thought about it during Algebra 2, while Savannah choked on her equation in front of the class, but Mr. Bates was too busy reading the latest issue of Guns and Ammo to notice. I thought about it during the Future Farmers of America assembly, when I couldn't find Lena and ended up sitting with the band. Link was sitting with the guys a few rows behind me, but I didn't notice until Sean and Emery started making animal noises. After a while, I couldn't hear them anymore. My mind kept going back to Ethan Carter Waite. It wasn't that he was a Confederate. Everyone in Gatlin County was related to the wrong side in the war between the states. We were used to that by now. It was like being born in Germany after World War II, being from Japan after Pearl Harbor, or America after Hiroshima. History was a bitch sometimes. You couldn't change where you were from, but still, you didn't have to stay there. You didn't have to stay stuck in the past, like the ladies in the DAR or the Gatlin Historical Society or the sisters. And you didn't have to accept that things had to be the way they were, like Lena. Ethan Carter Waite hadn't. And I couldn't either. All I knew was, now that we knew about the other Ethan Waite, we had to find out more about Genevieve. Maybe there was a reason we had stumbled across that locket in the first place. Maybe there was a reason we had stumbled across each other in a dream, even if it was more of a nightmare. Normally, I would have asked my mom what to do, back when things were normal and she was still alive. But she was gone. My dad was too out of it to be any help, and Amma wasn't about to help us with anything that had to do with the locket. Lena was still being moody about Macon. The rain outside was a dead giveaway.
I was supposed to be doing my homework, which meant I needed about a half gallon of chocolate milk and as many cookies as I could carry in my other hand. I walked down the hallway from the kitchen and paused in front of the study. My dad was upstairs taking a shower, which was about the only time he left the study anymore, so the door was probably locked. It always was, ever since the manuscript incident. I stared at the door handle, looking down the hall in either direction. Balancing my cookies precariously on top of my milk carton, I reached toward it. Before I could so much as touch the handle, I heard the click of the lock moving. The door unlocked, all by itself, as if someone inside was opening the door for me. The cookies hit the floor. A month ago, I wouldn't have believed it, but now I knew better. This was Gatlin, not the Gatlin I thought I knew, but some other Gatlin that had apparently been hiding in plain sight all along. A town where the girl I liked was from a long line of casters. My housekeeper was a seer who read chicken bones in the swamp and summoned the spirits of her dead ancestors, and even my dad acted like a vampire. There seemed to be nothing too unbelievable for this Gatlin. It's funny how you can live somewhere your whole life, but not really see it. I pushed on the door, slowly, tentatively. I could see just a glimpse of the study, a corner of the built-in shelves stuffed with my mom's books and the Civil War debris she seemed to collect wherever she went. I took a deep breath and inhaled the air from the study. No wonder my dad never left the room. I could almost see her, curled up in her old reading chair by the window. She would have been typing, just on the other side of the door. If I opened the door a little more, for all I knew, she might be there now. Only I couldn't hear any typing, and I knew she wasn't there, and she never would be again. The books I needed were on those shelves. If anyone knew more about the history of Gatlin County than the sisters, it was my mom. I took a step forward, pushing the door open just a few inches farther.
Sweet host of heaven and earth, Ethan Waite, if you're fixin' to set one foot in that room, your daddy will knock you clean into next week.
I nearly dropped the milk. Amma.
I'm not doing anything. The door just opened. Shame on you. No ghost in Gatlin would dare set foot in your mama and daddy's study, except your mama herself.
She looked up at me defiantly. There was something in her eyes that made me wonder if she was trying to tell me something, maybe even the truth. Maybe it was my mom opening the door. Because one thing was clear. Someone, something, wanted me to get into that study as much as somebody else wanted to keep me out. Amma slammed the door and drew a key out of her pocket, locking it. I heard the click and knew my window of opportunity had slammed shut, as quickly as it had opened. She crossed her arms.
It's a school night. Don't you have some studying to do?
I looked at her, annoyed.
Going back to the library? You and Link finished with that report?
And then it came to me.
Yeah, the library. As a matter of fact, that's where I'm headed right now.
I kissed her cheek and ran past her.